This is NBC Nightly News, Tuesday, July 25th. Reported by John Chancellor with David Brinkley's Journal.
Good evening. It's a busy news day. Senator Thomas Eagleton disclosed that he's been in the hospital three times during the last 12 years with a nervous condition, and we'll hear him talking about that in just a moment. Both the Senate and the House are working on end-the-war legislation, and a House committee, to everyone's surprise, this afternoon voted for a quick Vietnam pullout. We'll have film from the town of Tam Quan as it was recaptured by the South Vietnamese. We'll be checking in at the trial of Daniel Ellsberg, and David Brinkley will be along talking about the vice presidency, which is what Senator Eagleton is running for on the Democratic ticket. When Senator George McGovern picked Eagleton as his running mate, he did not know that Eagleton had been in the hospital three times between the years 1960 and 1966 for treatment of what is being called nervous exhaustion and fatigue. In some of his hospital visits, Eagleton was treated by a psychiatrist and given electric shock treatment. Eagleton said that he is now in fine health. He stressed that his hospital visits had nothing whatever to do with what he called false charges of an alcohol problem earlier in his career. All of this came out today at a press conference at McGovern's vacation headquarters in South Dakota. John Dancy reports from there.
Senator Eagleton arrived here in the Black Hills about midnight last night. It was his first extended conference with Senator McGovern since Eagleton won the nomination. After their strategy session this morning, McGovern and Eagleton held a joint news conference.
There have been some rumors circulating as to my health, and thus today I wish to give you as complete a picture as I possibly can as a layman about my own personal health. I charge no one with malice insofar as spreading these rumors are concerned, but I think it is a legitimate question that the press has to ask of me as to whether my health is such that I could hold the high office of Vice President of the United States. On three occasions in my life, I have voluntarily gone into hospitals as a result of nervous exhaustion and fatigue. And as a younger man, I must say that I drove myself too far.
Again, at the risk of being indelicate, but was alcohol involved in the exhaustion at all?
Alcohol was not involved in any iota or way, shape, or form whatsoever. Now that has been mentioned, that has been a rumor that has plagued me for all these recent years. And I can assure you categorical, without hesitation, unequivocally, there has been no trace, no hint, no iota, not one iota of alcoholism as part of these rumors. I mean, as part of the actual facts, albeit it has been part of the rumors.
When I talked to Senator Eagleton about my decision to ask him to go as my running mate, I asked him if there were any problems in his past that he thought were significant, that were worth discussing with me at that time, and he said no, and I agree with that.
From South Dakota, Senator Eagleton flew to Los Angeles tonight to begin a five-day West Coast campaign swing that will include a quick trip to Hawaii. The senator was met by newsmen at the airport, and he indicated firmly that he does not intend to discuss the medical question beyond what he said earlier today in South Dakota.
Work on here in California particularly.
I think I've covered the subject as exhaustively as I possibly can, and therefore I have nothing to add beyond what I said in the Black Hills of South Dakota today at about noon today. I'll be glad to try to answer some questions on other pertinent subjects that may be of interest to you, but I've said what I intend to say on that subject and don't want to belabor the point.
Senator, why didn't you tell Senator McGovern before the announcement was made of the nomination?
That question was asked at South Dakota. I'm not going to replow and refurrow, as it were, ground that has been covered extensively and thoroughly, as it was at that conference
we're
at the Black Hills.
The vice president, partially because Vice President Agnew has attracted considerable attention, partly because more and more people think of it as a very important office. David Brinkley's Journal tonight deals with the vice presidency. David?
This country's first vice president, John Adams, said, "In this office, I am nothing, but I may be everything." Well, 8 years later, he was. Vice President Alvin Barkley used to joke about the family who had two sons. One ran away to sea, and one became vice president, and neither was ever heard from again. Well, despite the jokes, the fact is that 8 vice presidents have succeeded presidents who died in office, and 9 others have run for president, or tried to. So while the office itself may be inconsequential, it's an effective platform for politicians who want to be president, either through others' bad fortune or their own ambition. An effective platform for politicians who want to use it. For example, Spiro Agnew, when he first took office, himself was making jokes about how obscure, unknown, and unimportant he was. But in about 2 years, he had become so famous, Washington was making jokes not about whether Nixon would accept Agnew for a second term, but whether Agnew would accept Nixon. Now that one is settled, and the president wants Agnew again, he says. And McGovern chose Senator Eagleton, who said today he had been in hospitals 3 times for treatments including psychiatric counseling and electric shock therapy for what he called a nervous condition. It has been a long time since the office of vice president got so much attention. Since of this country's 38 vice presidents, 17 have become president or tried to, it may be the office needs more serious attention than it gets. John?
Roy Neal, NBC News, Los Angeles, reporting that the House Foreign Affairs Committee has reversed its previous position on end-the-war language. It has approved a directive for withdrawal of all United States forces from Indochina by the 1st of October in return for release of American POWs and a ceasefire limited to safe U.S. withdrawal. The directive was written into a foreign aid bill.
Exercise is part of a good health program. So are regular doctor checkups. And so is care in selecting the best medicine, even for occasional headaches. No leading headache tablet is unhealthy used properly, but Bufferin is better. Because it not only ensures you get the pain reliever doctors specify most, it's the only leading tablet with ingredients to make it go to work faster and help protect your stomach. Do you think about your health? Bufferin does.
Mommy, I want a drink.
Mommy, have a glass of juice, please.
Mommy, give me some milk.
I'm thirsty. Give me a glass of anything.
Wouldn't it be nice if your children could get their own drinks without interrupting you? With a Dixie kitchen dispenser, they can. And your kitchen won't be cluttered with between-meal glasses to wash. Get Dixie, the kitchen cup that lets kids help themselves. And that can be a big help to you.
Mommy, I got my own juice. Now can I have a peanut butter sandwich?
At the White House today, Presidential Press Secretary Ronald Ziegler said the North Vietnamese are having some success with their campaign to get the world to believe that American planes are systematically bombing the dikes in North Vietnam. Ziegler repeated again, the dikes are not military targets. The dikes are important to the North Vietnam because if they are breached by bombs, serious flooding would result and thousands of people would drown. Yesterday, the UN Secretary General, Kurt Waldheim, said he had information the dikes are being bombed. Secretary of State William Rogers complained, and the American ambassador to the UN, George Bush, talked first to Waldheim about it and then to reporters.
I strongly presented to the Secretary General our government's views that there is a massive propaganda campaign on dike bombing. And I reaffirmed to the Secretary General, having talked to him once about it once before, that in our opinion, Hanoi was doing everything they could to escalate these falsehoods. I am convinced that the Secretary General did not mean to give credibility to the view that the United States was deliberately bombing these dikes.
Absolutely.
Can you deny the dikes have been bombed inadvertently?
No, I would simply stand by the official statements of the United States government. I can deny that they've been targeted.
Bush and other American officials, including President Nixon, have chosen their words carefully when talking about the irrigation dikes and dams. They have denied that dikes have been bombed deliberately or are on the official target list, and this has given the impression that dikes have not been hit. But the Pentagon conceded today that dikes almost certainly have been bombed when they are near or part of what the United States considers to be military targets. The Pentagon spokesman, Jerry Friedheim, went further than before by saying that North Vietnamese anti-aircraft and missile batteries, bridges and roads carrying military traffic, electric power plants, and a new fuel pipeline from China often are on or near dikes. And he conceded when these military targets are hit, dikes have been cut and damaged. In many places in North Vietnam, the road is the only high ground. It is the dike. Also, the pipeline from China is laid over and through dikes. And so bombs dropped on these targets inevitably hit dikes, too. Ron Nesson, NBC News at the Pentagon.
At the United Nations, Waldheim said he would have nothing further to say on the matter of the dikes for the time being. Jane Fonda, the actress and anti-war activist, says she saw two dikes which had been hit by American bombs during her recent visit to North Vietnam. She also insisted in a press conference in Paris that she did not go on Hanoi radio to urge American servicemen to disobey orders, although she admitted making anti-war broadcasts while in Hanoi.
Big or little, short or shaggy, all dogs suffer with fleas. The Hart's 90-day collar ends that suffering. Just put the collar on, and for 3 months it kills fleas dead, from his nose to his tail. And remember, fleas can torture cats too. Give them the same excellent flea protection with the Hart's Mountain 90-day collar for cats. For dogs or cats, the Hart's 90-day collar really works.
Hi, Dick. Did you get the vacation money?
Yes, dear. And I got the money to pay the bills, all the bills. I switched to Beneficial.
Beneficial Finance wants to lend you the full amount you have in mind, so you can do what you have in mind.
Will all fishermen come to lunch?
Toot, toot. At Beneficial, toot, toot. You're good for more. Toot, toot.
In Chicago, State's Attorney Edward Hanrahan and 13 law enforcement officers are on trial, charged with covering up police misconduct in a raid on a Black Panther headquarters in 1969. Two Panther leaders, Mark Clark and Fred Hampton, were shot to death in the raid. Until today, the evidence seemed to indicate that only one shot was fired by the Panthers, the rest by the police. But today, there was a surprising development in the trial, and Carol Simpson has a report on that.
The surprising turn in the trial came this morning when Special Prosecutor Barnabas Sears turned over to the court copies of statements allegedly made by four Black Panthers who survived the raid. The unsigned statements, not disclosed until today, claim Panthers inside the apartment fired a number of shots at police, not just one. Prosecutor Sears revealed the statements were found last weekend during a routine check into the files of a Black Panther attorney. An attorney defending Hanrahan and the 13 other lawmen standing trial with him claimed this new evidence indicates four Black Panther survivors perjured themselves before two grand juries when they testified they did not shoot at police. The statements presented in court today contradict this and claim at least five Panthers were holding guns during the raid. Hanrahan and his co-defendants are now demanding their trial should be held up until Black Panther attorneys explain in court the circumstances under which the statements were made and why this information was kept secret until today. Prosecutor Sears argued the new statements do not alter the charge that Hanrahan and the others on trial concealed evidence and made false statements describing the raid. The trial resumes Thursday when Black Panther attorneys will be asked to explain. It's likely the defense will demand a mistrial, and a case that took 2.5 years to prepare at a cost of nearly $500,000 could be thrown out. Carol Simpson, NBC News, Chicago.
The trial of Daniel Ellsberg and Anthony Russo is expected to begin tomorrow in Los Angeles. The two men are charged with violation of the Espionage Act and conspiracy in the theft of the Pentagon Papers. Here's a report from Roy Neal.
Since the first of the year, Federal Judge Matt Byrne has listened to pretrial motions and hearings in the Pentagon Papers trial of Daniel Ellsberg and Anthony Russo. 2 weeks ago, he filled the courtroom with prospective jurors. Finally, a jury of 8 women and 4 men was chosen. And today, in a final round, 6 alternates were considered. In choosing the jurors, the judge asked all the questions, a system the defense didn't like.
We're about to start a major 3-month trial knowing very little about our jury, which is unfortunate. No one in this country should be forced to a trial under these circumstances. But we're satisfied that the ones who've answered have been fair and honest, and if we can go by superficial impressions, which unfortunately we have to, we're satisfied.
The defense has said it intends to take the issues in this case to the public. Each morning, for example, Anthony Russo and his chief attorney meet at a headquarters a few blocks from the courthouse. They and their supporters discuss strategy before going to court. A Pentagon Papers defense fund pays for the attorneys. A different fund, the Pentagon Papers Peace Project, has been organized openly as the propaganda arm of the defense. Operating next door to the defense group, this organization has begun distributing pamphlets. It has a highly organized distribution system covering the Los Angeles area to get out notices of meetings and reports on the case. Ellsberg or Russo are usually the key speakers. And there's even a bi-weekly newspaper called the Pentagon Paper. 35,000 copies were printed and sent out a few days ago. The Peace Project also holds meetings to discuss new ways to publicize the trial. They are funded, they say, entirely by contributions, and most of the workers are anti-war activists. Leading up to the trial, Ellsberg and Russo have challenged the government repeatedly. In the latest round, it was revealed the government had overheard someone connected with the defense in a wiretap, but the judge ruled the conversation was not relevant to the trial. After more than 6 months of preliminary legal skirmishing, the Pentagon Papers trial finally is ready for opening arguments. The trial itself, according to attorneys, should last about 3 months. Roy Neal, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Beautiful. Oh.
In the old days when Mom bought a Frigidaire refrigerator, it was really an occasion. Today, it's another occasion. Our convenient new three-door refrigerator. Buy one during Frigidaire Week and we'll give you an automatic ice maker for free. You pay only for the installation. That's something Mom never got in the old days.
I'm an intake valve. And forget what you've heard, honey. Working in an automobile engine ain't all bright lights and glamour. I can tell you, I'm mean. It's dirty down here. So I gotta have a good detergent. Or the engine I work in could use more gasoline than it should. And that is not good at all. Well, I just love Mobil. It helps keep me clean, and it does wonders for my personality.
Use Mobil detergent gasoline. It can help your car's performance.
The government today exempted 10 million low-wage workers from pay controls, all of those making less than $2.75 an hour. The Associated Press reported today the Public Health Service conducted a 40-year experiment on 600 people with syphilis and purposely denied treatment to 200 of them to see what effect this would have on the human body. Prices fell today on the stock markets and trading that ranged from moderate to light. The Dow Jones Industrials fell almost a point. On the New York Exchange, the average price of a share lost 12 cents. On the American Exchange, the average price of a share lost 6 cents. Finally tonight, a letter which arrived from Greenville, South Carolina. We don't usually read mail on the air, but this one was better than most. It was written at the conclusion of our coverage of the Democratic Convention in Miami Beach. It reads as follows. Dear sir, I do not see why you are spending $4 million covering this on television. I am 11 years old, and I could tell you that I was going to stop the war, and I was going to decrease the cost of living, and I was going to feed everybody that needed to be fed. Now I ask you, why don't you elect me president? I have promised you everything that all the other candidates have promised. Think about it. Sincerely, Reb Floyd. All right, Reb, we will. And good night for NBC News.